Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. I hope you're having a good November. People asked me if we had any themes for this particular month since, you know, between October and having spooky movies, and this December we're doing kind of more family-oriented movies. Well, I mean, slash holiday movies, right? It's December. I was asked if November does, and, you know, looking at the list and looking at stuff, we don't really have a theme, but we were thinking kind of the, you know, the big movies that were on since everyone's together. And this kind of falls into that. I don't know. It was a movie that was on TV a lot when I was a kid, and, you know, it feels kind of like a nice snug fit, just like Top Gun was on all the time. So anyway, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic tour with Steve Buscemi. What can you say? If you're listening to this when it comes out, which I hope you are, hello. Those first week numbers really do help us move up the iTunes charts. Cineprov has two shows in December. We're doing a kind of defend the childhood style, you know, one on the Rankin and Bass shorts and that kind of thing. And then we're doing the Santa Claus versus Satan movie, I believe just called The Santa Claus, which is just, yeah, no, that's something weird. But we are, you know, kind of assembling a growing audience. So please, if you can, come out. It'll be nice to see you. Also, you know, for the holidays, please give us a good review. 5 stars on iTunes or Stitcher or however you listen to this stuff is awesome, and it really makes a difference to us as we move up the charts. So thanks.
Hi, this is Siri. I would never, never ever listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. Who the heck says howdy anyway? Why don't you listen to Chris Hardwick instead? I can get you his information. The Nerdist is everywhere anyway, haha. That was a joke. The Earth Station 1 podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstation1.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week we watch 1996's Escape from L.A., Kurt Russell's Return to Form. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood, and on panel this week we have...
Kelsey.
Hello, this is Daniel, but you can call me Snake.
Matthew W. Quinn, author of the teen horror novel The Thing in the Woods.
Matt Perini, I've never written anything in my life.
I love how Matt Quinn's the only one that's using this to his advantage.
Yeah, no, this is... only hurting my career. Riffret, Cineprov.
We don't want you to advertise for us anymore, Nick. This is bad. This is just bad.
People are showing up just to throw fruit at us now.
Is it ripe fruit? We always keep it.
Well,
it's canned fruit. That could be
painful.
Then it's assault.
Yeah, that is technically a crime.
I love the idea of someone coming up, throwing a can of tomatoes and just thump down and you're out. Is it fresh fruit? Oh man, it's like the Cookie Monster. Yeah, that's funny.
Hey, I need to go to the grocery store and get some bananas. If someone wants to throw them at me, I'll keep them.
Oh man, that's a musical act I'd watch. All right, so we watched... I want to keep saying The Thing, but this is the second John Carpenter movie with Kurt Russell this season. So, yeah. Matt, this is your pick, Perini.
Yes.
How was it? Hold up?
I still liked it. I can't even think of the last time I had seen this. It was years ago, I guess, at this point. But I guess whenever it was, I didn't realize how bad all the CG was. Like, it must have been long enough ago that it wasn't distractingly bad, but now it's distractingly bad.
Do you remember seeing the trailer for this when it first came out?
No, I do not.
Well, the trailer, if I remember correctly, it was always the first one that they'd show, and it would usually be the, remember, there's no smoking in this theater, make sure you turn off all of your pagers, because this was the 90s, that's what everybody had, and remember not to talk. Should you violate any of those rules, you will be sent immediately to the L.A. prison colony. And then they cut into Snake Plissken saying something, and away we went.
Aren't we going to do a plot summary?
Not usually. We usually have banter at the beginning, Matt.
Yes.
And then we get to it. It does remind me of, was it Toys, where Robin Williams sang, "Let's all go to the lobby."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just a way to flesh it out to advertise for the movie. Ironically enough, that movie didn't do too well, so I don't know why they thought that this would be the thing that would bring it back, but whatever. Now, well,
I'm just picturing a Snake Plissken going, "Let's all go to the lobby."
Once her name walks up with like one of those old cigarette trays from like the 1930s. That'd be funny. But yeah, so as Matt pointed out, Daniel, would you like to give us a plot summary?
It's the same plot as Escape from New York. All right. So it's 2013 and an earthquake has separated. It's the future.
This is a historical fiction.
Yes,
at this
it
point,
is.
So.
And an earthquake has separated LA from the mainland US. And because of that, a theocratic president has gotten a life term. But his daughter gets kidnapped by some radical organization who is based in LA, and Snake sent in to find it, as well as some special remote control that controls satellites that will release an EMP and potentially destroy the world.
GoldenEye ripoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was concise.
What was the plot of the first one?
Well, Snake is sent into the prison colony of New York after the president's escape pod crashes there, and he's given like 12 hours to find the president so that the president can get to the summit on time, but this gang has kidnapped him.
Yeah, okay. The first one's a better plot.
Yeah.
First one's a much better plot.
But, you know, it's funny, too, other than the fact that, for those of you who are old as I am, it looks like the graphics from either Duke Nukem 3D or MDK.
Or one of the earlier Descent games.
Oh, especially his little rocket thing, submarine thing.
The submarine.
But I was thinking throughout this whole thing, other than how magnificent the CGI is, they missed the boat, right? Like, in the 80s, New York being a hellscape and the future being worse made perfect sense. But by 96, like, crime rates had dropped dramatically.
Yeah.
Like, Giuliani had already cleaned up Manhattan. So, like, the idea that it was a hellscape is kind of funny.
Well, that's why I guess maybe Los Angeles, because you see drive-by shootings and stuff.
That does make sense. I mean, the gangster rap and the Compton scene were all about it. So, I don't know. John Carpenter was old and white. That sounds like something he'd be scared of.
And Tupac died this year. I was right.
Yeah.
He died September 13th, 96.
Oh, was it 96?
Are you sure he's dead?
Yes.
Yes.
There's a doc out right now that's pretty good. But Eazy-E died the year before and B.I.G. died the year after. So you have this Tupac guy walking around. I wonder if this movie wasn't kind of... Well, we could do this. This movie is bizarre as hell.
Have you ever seen Strange Days or heard of it? Isn't that a lot more of what a better depiction of future LA in the same sort of genre?
Total Recall is a better representation of the future than this.
Yeah.
This
futuristic year of 2013.
They could have gone a little further in the future.
Why did this Terminator is like hundreds of years in the future and he goes back. This, you can do that. Just pretend. Like, Snake Plissken's a timeless character.
The Just original say in one, the near future.
The original one took place in 1997.
It's Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I guess they didn't have, like, too much weird future-y bullshit. Like, they did, but it wasn't, like, way over the top.
No, the crime part is what's the future. Yeah. Like, that things are out of control.
Well, I was just saying, yeah, no. You're correct, yep.
But no, I mean, like, but there's... The hologram is the only thing. But ironically, the first hologram was Tupac.
Oh, yeah, the first effective one.
And that's what got shot. Tupac is still alive.
You got to moan out of Kelsey. Kelsey, this is your first one. What were your thoughts on this? Be honest.
There was just so much stuff going on. Like, I don't even know where to start with what was wrong. Like, the CGI... The interesting thing, though, is that as bad as, like, the plot holes were in the CGI, the thing that bothered me the most was the geography. Like, Anaheim is not in L.A. Anaheim is not on the island.
Yeah, that's true. There is the end sequence that takes place entirely as Disneyland.
It's supposed to be Disneyland, and it's like, no, that's not on the island.
It's called, like, Magic World or something.
The Happy Kingdom by the Sea.
I had no idea what the hell they were talking about.
It's like, they did such a good job of, like, recreating it. Like, that cafe that they're shooting into, like, the Carnation Cafe looks just like it, but it's red and white, and so there's this blue and white. So they were blatantly,
I had
like,
no idea what was going on.
Disney obviously wasn't going to give John Carpenter permission to use their name.
Yeah.
Well, and then at the end, when they're flying away in the police helicopter, they fly past
he kept trying to herd Naomi under a table or something.
Phil. So what happens next?
Okay. Well, let's start at the beginning. First, it's Jamie Lee Curtis talking. She's the one that does the voiceover explaining the world.
Was the narration at the beginning?
Yeah,
yeah, that was Jamie Lee Curtis. That was so random.
Well, that's how the first one begins, too, and it's also Jamie Lee Curtis doing that. Oh. So it's about – it's kind of weird. So the weirdest thing, though, about the opening is in Escape from New York, they made it very blatant. The reason shit's the way it is because crime is out of control. In this case, it's just – we've got a crazy man running for president who somehow predicted an earthquake.
The setup was bizarre, yeah. Like, yeah. He divined an earthquake, which earned him the presidency, and now
a full
everyone
life
that's
term.
Yeah.
And they moved the capital, Lynchburg, Virginia, which is where Jerry Falwell's Liberty University is.
Oh, is that the connection?
Oh, I didn't notice. I didn't realize that.
So they're trying to be a little clever.
Wait, was it Lynchburg or was it Lynchburg, Tennessee, where Jack Daniels is from?
Ooh.
No, I'm not.
Well, there's a secret tunnel from one Lynchburg to the other so Jerry Falwell can get his whiskey without anyone seeing him.
That's what Baptists are no less friendly than when you run into them at the liquor store. That's true. Yeah, Lynchburg, here we go. Point of Honor, where they filmed the movie. There you go. I'm looking at pictures now.
All right.
So they have to bring in Snake Plissken after I guess the president's daughter goes AWOL.
Utopia is her name.
Yes.
What a stupid character.
Yes.
Yes.
Also, what a stupid character.
A crazed fundamentalist straw man must have married a hippie, and that was a name they could agree on.
Wait. Crazed fundamentalist straw man? Are you talking about the president?
Yeah.
What was straw man about him?
Well, kind of a two-dimensional, big bad Liberty University grad type.
Oh, so Roy Moore.
Yeah. Okay.
Roy Moore is probably more qualified than this one.
So we have the uncle from Spider-Man, who is the president of the United States with the worst rug I've ever seen. And
oh, that was a magnificent piece of black hair. It was almost as good as Snake's mullet.
And so we're introduced to him after Stacey Keach tells us that the president's daughter has hijacked Air Force 3 and a doomsday device and crash-landed in L.A. Mm-hmm. for whatever reason. Shut down, let's say. I don't remember why she ends up landing.
Well, she was...
She took an escape pod there.
Oh, right. Yeah. Someone saw Air Force One 2 years before and realized that the president can escape through an escape pod.
Yes.
Fine. It's the future of 2013. There are escape pods in Air Force 3.
And 1994 when they made them for the movie, because they don't really exist, apparently.
Didn't Air Force One come out a year after this?
97?
Yeah, I think it did.
It's possible. And it was one of Bill Clinton's favorites, apparently.
Oh. recasting him as an action star, taking ass in Air Force One, to be one of my favorites too.
I would use my budget to do that. Just put me in the movie. I want to be an action star.
Oh, well, that new diet he's on, he certainly looks a lot healthier.
Harrison Ford's like, I'm not going to be vice president to any son of a bitch. Okay, so Che Guevara wannabe essentially captures the
he's even called Cuervo.
Cuervo Jones, what a villain name.
So Jose Cuervo wants to destroy the United States. He's essentially leading an invasion of other Latin American forces. Canada doesn't matter this
from story. Third world countries, including Brazil and Cuba.
and using this doomsday weapon, which is essentially the GoldenEye satellite from the year before.
Yes.
And they manage to send an armada to Miami, and no one notices until they're right there.
And apparently this satellite system is the only way to stop them, because we don't have an army in this futuristic year of 2013.
I agree with you. This was the worst part of the movie. Like, the threat from the third world, their armada. Like, we have the biggest navy in the world, by far. And the Cuban armada is threatening us.
Well, and the other thing is, we don't see anyone.
we see 50 guys with machine guns in Disney World. And that represents all the world coming out to get us, because the cube, they don't even try to CGI render a bunch of battleships in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico.
Nick, that would be too expensive.
Yeah. Considering what
you
they
saw, the amazing, yeah. amazing yeah. usage of the, CGI
the,
throughout.
Yeah, the so. Amazingly badly rendered GoldenEye EMP-proof helicopter knockoff.
I mean, it would have been really fantastic if there's just one flyer, because at one point they're riding a Universal Studios ride where they're suspended from the ceiling shooting machine guns. So, like, they could have literally shown a bathtub with little boats floating in it, and it would have been right on par.
Well, I just remember the opening shot as they're panning up to the island of Los Angeles, and the CGI water is so bad it's splashing everywhere, but nothing gets wet.
Yeah. Oh my god. And Snake Plissken is literally, it's zoomed in on his face.
There are a lot of close shots of Snake
there
Plissken.
Has to be. They couldn't afford wide shots.
Yeah, the submarine, you see him climbing out of it, is rendered. As Daniel pointed out, he's climbing out of a cardboard box they CGI'd over.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to pull something up for us in a second here. But from here, Snake is taken through this kind of prison cell, very future prison-y. He gets scratched on the back of the hand, which infects him with a virus called something.
Plutonix 3000 or something.
Plutoxin 7 or something?
Something with 7.
You guys paid way more attention to this than I did. But you're right. It was
Plutoxin, I think.
Plutoxin. Yeah. It was a portmanteau. I like that. Good.
Hey, I stayed off my phone this time. Aren't you proud of me?
I am so proud of you.
Oh, high five, Matt.
All right. So I went... how much do you think the budget for this movie was in 1996?
I know that's what sunk the movie, was because it cost four times as much as the original, and it made about the same amount of
this
money.
This is cheating,
it was still
Daniel.
$25 and a dinner for two at Taco Bell.
It was, okay, I'm going to guess, 40 to 50 million.
Pick one, man.
45 million.
That means he's close, so I'm going to go with 43.
Oh, 43.
Okay, say 48 million.
35.
Go low. Price is right at $2.
So, in that way, 48 was yours?
Yeah.
48, you win. It was 50 on the nose. And that's not advertising.
Ooh.
That's just the budget. And how much do you think it made domestically?
Well, this I know.
Significantly less than that.
$2.
It made 25 million, which is how much the first one made.
Yeah, and on the note, its opening weekend was 9. It opened 3rd, and that's not great.
No.
What was in front of it?
I'll pull it up. Yeah, that's a good question. I should have looked that up, but then you asked me, and now I'm
That's okay.
You can fill.
No, it's fine. We'll
where
just
fashion, where fashion sits, putting on the machine gun.
All right.
Okay, speaking of fashion, isn't
oh
that...
Oh my god, this is embarrassing.
I was going to say, okay. I really hope it's some good stuff.
Okay, I'll give you the top five. Number five. Or they're all good.
Okay.
I'll go number 10. Or number 11. Oh, my God. Number 11 was Twister.
Nice.
Number 10 was Kingpin. Number 9 was The Nutty Professor. Courage Under Fire. Chain Reaction. Never saw that.
Ew.
Phenomenon starring John Travolta. Matilda. Well, stay tuned. Number 4, Independence Day. This beat Independence Day that weekend.
Oh, wow. But how long has Independence Day been out at this point?
A long time.
Sure. Yeah, it had been out for 4 weeks or 6 weeks by this point.
Okay.
And it only beat by $200,000. An Escape from LA, then A Time to Kill. Number 1 this weekend, opening weekend, Jack, starring Robin Williams. Which made $12 million opening weekend.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Is Jack the one where he's a 10-year-old in the 40-year-old's body?
Yes.
Yes.
Directed by Francis Ford Coppola, I believe, right?
Who needed the money so, so badly.
Wow, he's slumming.
God.
He was bankrupt for like a decade and a half. He needed the money desperately.
And it cost $50 million to make as well.
What, Jack did?
Jack did.
Oh, my God.
And it made $60
million. Oh, my God.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
How do you think John Carpenter felt about that? Was he just like, damn you, Coppola, when you saw
I think Coppola was more surprised than he was. Can you imagine making Jack and thinking it's going to be the biggest financial success of that year?
Ooh.
Or not even. It was eighth overall that year.
It was eighth?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Oh, my God.
Whatever.
What is... Oh, man.
I guess Independence Day was not as big as I thought it was. But regardless, we should move on.
That was a nice little sidetrack.
Yeah. Yeah, when we get to L.A., God, there's so many little vignettes. This is like a set piece movie kind
of. Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what it is. It's like they're remaking scenes from Escape from New York and just doing it like ever so slightly bigger.
Yeah.
So, like, I know one of the early scenes after he gets to L.A. is he has to find a team member who had gone in, I think, to find Utopia, and he finds him being used for target practice by knife throwers.
Yeah, neo-Nazi stereotypes wearing gray, kind of.
Who offered him $100 if he could hit him 3 times in a row with a knife? Like, no, there was no stakes. It was just if you can hit him, $100.
Well, and considering that later in the movie he makes 5 3-pointers to save his life, he should have just taken the money.
It. Yeah,
I'll trade you for information. I'm making him sound more and more like the man with no name from the Few Dollars trilogy.
It's the same character because John Carpenter would like watch spaghetti westerns and was clearly putting his hand on his pants.
Images.
That was going somewhere else.
Images to stick forks into your eyes too.
Well, I mean, I was going to say it's like Tarantino watching Japanese films and being like, I can make this American and make millions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your movie? What do you want to talk about? I'm not blaming
you. Oh, jeez.
You didn't make those.
I think the main set piece of the movie is the basketball scene, which is...
All right, so let's get there. When he lands... No, I mean...
Yeah.
He lands and he has to essentially first find the guy. He's being used for target practice. He shoots a bunch of neo-Nazis. They point him towards a parade. The parade essentially is where we run into Cuervo Jones the first time. Yep.
Oh, that car! Who came up with this car design? Like, who is the one that's let's put a bunch of doll heads on a car?
That's what the Duke of New York's car looked like in Escape from New York. It was very similar to that.
Well, I didn't remember.
It had the disco ball as the hood ornament in Escape from New York. So it was
it full size?
Yeah, it was a full-size disco ball.
Okay. Let's back up. In 1981, that's a joke at how disco's ruining the world. Now it's just kind of weird.
You're not wrong.
The doll heads, was that in the original, in New York as well?
I don't remember the doll heads, but I just know that they were looking, and it's like, okay, that's fairly similar, and let's just put doll heads on there, because that might mean something.
It was just weird. Yeah. Like, it was not with his character at all, so I don't know.
It also feels to me very, like, Tim Burton-y for some reason, as though, like, because it's a bright candy apple red car, like, it's the nicest thing we see in the entire movie.
Yeah.
And it's just covered in doll heads. I don't know.
I've seen some people do things to their cars that are rather freaky.
I mean, fair. It's Pride Weekend in Atlanta. I saw some pretty fantastic pictures. So, from there, he tries to catch up to the car by catching a motorcycle.
Yep.
Essentially, he runs at this point into Steve Buscemi.
Yep.
Who is Eddie from...
Map to the Stars Eddie.
Who has Maps to the Stars on these holographic tapes. That look like the kind of thing that you go to like an art museum and then you type the number in and it will tell you where to go.
Which apparently everyone has. Everyone has one of these.
Yeah, they have mini discs. Yes, there once was such a thing.
Yeah. For like 6 months.
And they're like the size of an Altoid. It's like these small little discs that play on a tape deck thing, whatever. But this point, Snake has to get through the next set piece, which is Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
When he shows up to this kind of... God, it's like this little yard outside of a hospital, or outside the Beverly Hills Inn.
Yeah.
Which is where a bunch of serial killers have stayed in real life. But anyway.
Was that where the Night Stalker stayed?
Yeah, that's where Ramirez stayed.
That's right.
And the Elisa Lam case happened.
Yes. Oh, God.
Elisa Lam is a really weird story. If you guys are into creepy things, look it up. After acting very odd on a security camera, she ends up disappearing for 2 weeks, and someone had stuffed her corpse into the water supply on the roof. So people were drinking water with her body in it for 2 weeks.
Gross.
And they were complaining to the front desk about the foul smell.
They were, but, you know, that doesn't mean a whole lot. But anyway, in there, the woman that he's hiding out with and him get captured by Bruce Campbell, who is doing plastic surgery.
Oh, that's the best set piece in this movie.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Oh, what is it? The Surgeon General of Beverly Hills?
Yes.
That was amazing. Oh, also the woman he's hiding out with is the love interest in the two Hot Shots movies.
Yeah. Giancarla something. She's an Italian actress playing someone from Southern California. No one here really belongs in this world. Steve Buscemi should never be in L.A. It didn't work out well for him. And so from here, they escape.
I don't know. And now we're getting closer to the Beverly Hill, to the Rose Bowl. We're trying to get to the Rose Bowl because he's supposed to be there. The bad guy, Cuervo Jones, who's Jorge Corafis. That's his name in the old play. So tell me about this Rose Bowl.
So this was the scene that I like remembered when I was first coming into this and like the most memorable one. And I already said that, but that's okay.
Yeah, you're fine.
So they set it up with this guy failing, who actually did a pretty good job. He got 6 points. Like, that's pretty good. So,
he tripped over his own feet during one of the shots.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's tough. Basketball's a hard game.
It's pressure, Daniel. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure.
So basically, just a really quick description. You have to make 5 end-to-end shots, essentially. Like, you have to – there are 2 hoops set up. You got to make 5 baskets. There's a 10-second shot clock. Or you get shot.
Yeah.
And no one has ever done it before, ever.
By a bunch of people standing around the perimeter of the fence and aiming the gun not only at the guy but at each other, and yet somehow they never get hit.
Yes.
And on top of that, they're wearing actual suits. Like, they're the only people we see that aren't dressed like they're in the Warriors. They're wearing like...
Yeah, they were.
And, I mean, let's not forget that we keep cutting back and forth to Snake Plissken doing bizarre things like this, where... The scene, theoretically, in real time, should take about a minute. Because he's going back and forth, right? 50 seconds, there's a warm-up. But they slow down time, so it takes about 3 minutes. But then they cut back to Stacey Keach and the president, who are just sitting around being like, I think he's dead. He's not dead. I think he's dead.
I gotta go pray.
And he's holding a Bible the whole time. It's a very...
Thoughts and prayers.
it's something, man. And then he makes the last shot. They don't want to let him go.
Yep.
But at the same time, not unlike Gladiator, which comes out in 3 years, they don't shoot him either.
Well, LA is a city that loves winners, so.
They start chanting Snake, but then no one cares that the hero is supposed to be shooting. There's no one really to root for in this movie other than Snake.
I'd say Snake. Snake. I mean, predominantly Snake.
But Snake isn't playing for his side by the end. He plays by his own rules.
He does.
Which is why he's so sexy. He has a very distinguishing face, doesn't he?
He really does. Kurt Russell, yeah.
Yeah, man. He's pretty awesome.
Cold
in
showers.
Does he show under his eye patch, or was I remembering that wrong? I thought that was part of this movie, but...
No,
I think it's in the first one.
I don't remember him ever showing him
For some reason, I distinctly remembered there being something with under his eye patch, but I could be wrong. I mean,
he was in Stargate. Maybe that happened in Stargate.
It's possible.
I haven't seen Stargate in a long time. Does he have an eye patch in
England? I don't think so. Does he have an eye patch in real life? We'll never know.
Well, he didn't.
That would be the best special effect of all if he did in real life, and then in some movies he doesn't. It's like when a bald actor is actually bald and not wearing a toupee.
I think we're onto something.
Yeah, Stanley Tucci's bald. The day Stanley Tucci makes a movie where he's actually bald, he's a hero. He's good in Death Proof, too.
Oh, yeah.
He might be the best part of that movie.
Oh.
It's not a great movie.
No. He was the only one that did anything in that movie.
Yeah, that's true. Any Doozleby. What's next? I mean, again, it's just little stories, little set pieces. He finds Peter Fonda again.
Oh, yeah. Peter Fonda's in this movie as a surfer.
Yeah.
Oh, the surfing scene is so bad.
Surfing scene is pretty bad.
I admit I found part of that funny when they're surfing through the canal and they ride up on the wave right behind Steve Buscemi's car. He does a double take.
Yep.
Yeah, it's something. Like, he's like, what?
And this was after Steve Buscemi had shot Kurt Russell in the leg, which, come on, there's no chance that Steve Buscemi is outpowering Kurt Russell.
Oh, he doesn't have to outpower him. He just has to shoot him. I've seen Boardwalk Empire. I believe Steve Buscemi can shoot a guy.
Okay.
It's good shit. Scorsese's Escape from L.A. It's 4.5 hours
long. Oh, man. I would still rather see that movie.
Just a guy in a trunk getting beaten for 45 minutes.
What the fuck are we doing in L.A.? Why the fuck are we still there? Let's fucking escape already.
I've seen Casino. That's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's also that long.
Probably make more sense.
I will give you Scorsese would probably have a plot. Oh, my God. That's funny. So from here, so after he climbs the fence, he starts getting shot at.
They do a lot of things in this movie.
Really have a lot of
like, I wasn't realizing how many things they do, but like they do a lot of shit.
That is the best like tagline review that needs to go down the back. They do a lot of things in this movie.
More things than you'd expect.
But I thought it was a much more straightforward, simple plot. Like we go in, we get some stuff.
It should be.
It should be.
It really should be. Like,
was New York like this, where he did all these random, like, let's go to this?
It was more cohesive. You at least got the sense that all the random stuff they were doing meant something.
Okay.
This feels like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video game, where there's a lot of little things along the way, and then you get to the end boss.
And it has nothing to do with any of the shit you were just doing.
And then you jump through a hole, and then it's a whole different level, right? Like, this time they're in a building for some reason, and now he's in the sewers.
Imagine if he had just caught Cuervo Jones right at the beginning. Movie over.
Yeah. He should have just shot him.
He should have shot him.
Like, well, the guns they're using in this movie, it takes like 6 seconds for two people shooting at each other on a motorcycle to register that they have in fact been shooting at each other.
These are the biggest fake guns I've ever seen.
Like, they were big fake guns.
They were huge fake guns. And eventually he has normal sidearms with these, but they have these cartoonishly large
sidearms. Costuming and aesthetics in this movie were very interesting. They were. I don't know who made all these decisions, but like, they weren't bad. They were just very interesting.
Snake Plissken shows up in like a black t-shirt,
skin tight. Like skin tight leather when we say t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. His costume at the beginning with those white camo pants and that skin tight black t-shirt. Oh, yeah. That's from Escape from New York.
And yes. And then the gorgeous leather jacket.
And
then they turn him into a leather daddy 5 minutes into this movie. He's wearing a leather t-shirt, a leather duster, leather pants, everything.
Well, it's supposed to be flame retardant or something. I mean, they try to explain it.
It does everything. Heat signatures.
Yeah, or stealth, which could explain the ending.
In what way?
Because he gets his jacket back from the guy who stole it earlier in the movie, and then the whole thing with the turns out he's really a hologram.
Well, yeah, but he could have also just been a hologram. I don't know how the jacket.
I think at some point after the jacket got stolen, he said something like, "Oh, I left that hologram doohickey thing in the jacket." Did. So
he said he talked to whatever the name at the military base was.
Stacey Keach, Malloy.
Who was like directly challenging the president? He had some balls.
He did. Well, the president's kind of a wishy-washy.
He definitely is. Yeah.
So I guess the final bit of this movie is after getting away from Steve Buscemi, and then getting back in touch with Steve Buscemi, he ends up needing a backup, and he finds Pam Grier, who's playing Hershey.
Mm-hmm. You mean Carjack? Whatever.
Carjack Malone, I believe it was.
Yeah, it's Pam Grier with a man's voice.
Yeah.
Was Carjack a recurring character from something?
No.
Okay, just checking.
They just keep referencing Cleveland, and I don't know.
Yeah, no one knows what could really went use on in Cleveland.
Escape from Cleveland movie right now.
Yeah.
Come on down to Cleveland Town, everybody.
What the hell is this? Sorry, I got distracted. There's Escape from New Jersey.
What?
What?
Picking up where John Carpenter's Escape from New York ended.
Oh, yeah.
Plissken stuck in New Jersey.
Is it Kurt Russell?
It was a comic, wasn't it?
It is Hector De La Rosa. This is no one. There's no one in this movie.
It's a movie?
I have never heard of this.
In the most technical format. It's 45 minutes long? What the hell is this?
Is that a fan film?
Probably.
Oh, it must be. It's IMDb. Of course it's a fan film. What am I saying? You can put anything on IMDb. I probably have 3 credits.
I'm on IMDb. I was a production assistant on a movie.
I was too, I think. Let's check.
Perini. I don't see Perini. I see Quinn. Matthew Quinn, cinematographer. That's not you.
Matt. I'm credited as Matt Quinn.
Were you in the production manager for Skirt Chasers?
No.
Are you sure?
That sounds like something you would do.
Matt Quinn for what was the movie?
Santa's Boot Camp.
What the hell?
Matthew W. Quinn, Miscellaneous, as Matt Quinn. There you go.
And I met Eric Roberts making the movie. He's actually really nice.
That's not... I'm glad he was nice, but I'm not sure if that's something to be proud of.
Directed by Ken Feinberg. There we go. Willy Wonka meets the Breakfast Club at Christmas.
Yeah, Mr. Feinberg is really nice, too.
I mean, I guess
those are two movies that don't really go together, though.
Willy Wonka meets the Breakfast Club at Christmas. When kids become so bratty and self-centered that Santa's elves go on strike, Santa, in desperation, must bring 6 unscrupulous youths to his boot camp to help save Christmas. Erotic situations.
What?
Cheerleader number one.
Let's go back. Let's go back. I heard erotic situations.
Oh, that would have been perfect.
Matt, were you an elf?
No, I was not an elf.
With itching powder. Little sister.
One of the poor girl's headshots is in sideways.
Oh, that's unfortunate for her.
Aww.
We should contact IMDb and get that corrected.
Are you her agent? Please contact us. That's really funny, Matt. Well done. Filmed in Atlanta, Georgia.
So why haven't
we
so everybody go
rent that movie and help Mr. Feinberg out.
So why haven't we ever gotten like Escape from the North Pole, which is like the Escape Christmas special?
Oh, well.
Which president is he rescuing from the North Pole?
President or Santa?
President's daughter?
They could tie it in. They could make an issues movie with human trafficking where the elves are being held as slaves.
Better than that. Okay, so there's an experimental cookie that's actually poisoned, and Santa eats it, but they have to get to Santa with the antidote before Santa dies. PR nightmare. So Snake Plissken has to infiltrate the North Pole this time.
Who does he shoot?
The snow miser from those Rankin and Bass things.
Okay.
Oh.
or maybe some elves try to usurp Santa Claus as he's dying, so he has to shoot like thousands of elves.
And it turns into like the Kill Bill set piece that they keep making fun of in Robot Chicken.
The Crazy 88s.
Yeah,
but they're all David the Gnome size. You just keep punting them.
So instead of Snake Plissken, you meet Jean-Claude Van Damme. So we get some flying spin kicks.
Okay, so I actually liked the end of this movie.
Okay, yeah, so why don't we break down the last act here?
Well, I mean like the last scene. I don't know about last act.
No, please, the last 10 minutes.
Well, yeah. First, they bought back a plot twist that they meant to do for the first one, which was that the virus he'd been infected with in order to do the mission was fake.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a cold. Or
it was a flu.
Which Carjack Malone does like mention.
Yes.
And he just doesn't believe Carjack Malone, who's now going by Hershey. And
yes, that's, yeah.
My favorite part of this is that there's something that happens in Cleveland that they keep referencing, but no one knows what it actually is. It's a nice touch.
Yeah.
That's called an interquel.
It is, but it's making fun of in the 80s how everyone had a story from Nam. They make the same joke in Black Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
But it just never pays off here. That's the best part. Like, that they literally never, ever pay it off. It's not like, oh, you tricked me just like you did in... No, just... Remember Cleveland? Yeah. The Browns suck.
Whoa, now.
Oh, just going to let that linger.
The Browns do suck.
Yeah, make an Escape from Cleveland movie. It turns out they were trying to hijack an ice cream truck or something.
Well, Escape from Cleveland happened, but then he ended back up on Family Guy.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
That was almost a joke.
That was this close. That was inches from being a joke. So Ed, explain the end of the movie.
So yeah, so he gets off the island with a flaming helicopter, with the president's daughter. Everyone else in the helicopter somehow dies, but they live.
Well, it crashes after it gets hit by the missile.
Oh, right, but Greer's not even in it anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Like they actually show it. Kind of like he and the president's daughter are both in the front seat, and then the whole back gets engulfed in flames. So apparently they all incinerate.
Yeah.
Which they don't really point out, but they're all dead.
Also Steve Buscemi kills Cuervo Jones as they're taking off in the helicopter.
He's a good shot.
Yeah, apparently.
So he manages to crash land. He gets Utopia out of the helicopter, has her run for the tree line after he tucked the little control unit in her jacket pocket without her knowing. Crash lands, and then, you know, all the U.S. police force, whatever they called them, come and track him down. So basically, to jump ahead a little bit, the president announces on TV that, like, Cuba, you better stop. I'm going to get you with the GoldenEye satellite.
Yeah.
And then it plays the maps from the stars track as he's trying to target them.
Yeah.
So they do, like, a little swap, which is not the only reveal.
No.
Which I actually, like, I liked this one.
Yeah.
So they try to get the unit from Snake. They're going to shoot him and recover it, and it turns out he's a hologram.
Yeah.
And then he destroys all of the world.
He literally goes through with it. There's not, like, some backup, and then it turns into the Postman.
I remember a lot of people being angry at the end of this movie because of the implications of what happens when you shut down the entire world.
I think it would have been better. I was just thinking about this when we were walking upstairs, and I was, you know, getting myself a drink. How great it would have been, because things don't turn down all at once. You see things kind of blink out. The president's in the middle of a speech. The TV goes blank. If at the end the entire movie had gone out as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, as the hologram fades away, then the camera cuts out, and then it goes to credit.
That actually would have been clever.
That would have been, yeah.
Because as it is, It's just like the Escape from New York, the end of Escape from New York. Mm-hmm. He just fades into the darkness. He walks off into the sunset. So this time, he literally kills the movie. I think that would have been phenomenal. Because he looks right down the barrel of the camera lens and lights a cigarette and has the worst last line of a movie ever.
So is it a black clove cigarette for aesthetics, or does he like smoking cloves? Because he was wearing all black.
I think it was for aesthetics.
I think it was that he's even more hardcore than Johnny Cash and even his cigarettes are black. I mean, honestly.
Quick poll.
I agree with you. I think this ending is badass.
Yeah.
It takes a little long.
It does.
But it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because he wins.
He does win.
In a situation where he shouldn't win. We were saying, like, this is even set up like a Bond movie where Bond doesn't want to do it. Because he's given a cue scene, and he said, if you don't do this, you die.
And I remember when I first watched this distinctly, I was like, there's no way he would have lived that through that helicopter crash. Because, like, we didn't see him jump out. We just saw the helicopter crash, and then he kind of appears. So I was like, there's no way he lived through that. And then when they reveal that it was a hologram, I was like, oh, shit. So he was a hologram. Yeah. Like, it got me. It was good.
Yeah, so maybe he's actually back in L.A. I mean, think the hologram's got a half-mile range.
Yeah, no,
they show him at the end after everything gets shut down. He's there still, and the hologram's gone.
It's so stupid that it could end the world with 666.
Yeah, it was really dumb.
Oh, no, it was perfect. What else is it going to be? But at the same time, it's kind of like he's just dialing 666. It's dramatic, as though he's opened the event horizon or something.
And then Elizabeth Hurley appears to give him another wish.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the president's daughter was like, oh my God, he did it. He ended the world. It's like, I think you're still going to die. Just because there's no electricity to electrocute you doesn't mean you're not going to be executed.
It's dark, but they'll find
it. Yeah, you know what still works after an EMP? Guns.
I don't know. These were pretty future guns.
Oh, yeah. The future 2013 guns.
I always love the future when it's 3 years ago.
It's the best.
It's like Back to the Future when like that became a national holiday or whatever happened when it was the day he went to the future and people were losing their shit.
Yep.
I was just kind of like, yeah, this is cute. It was one of my favorite movies growing up, and it was just kind of like, meh. Okay. Yeah. Now Biff's president. But we're just about out of time, so we should kind of go around the table and do our final judgments. We'll start with Matt, go around, and then since you were the defendant,
sure.
Give it second to last. Matt, what do you think?
Okay, it wasn't boring, but it was just kind of stupid. So I mean, there are a couple funny bits, but just don't bother.
It just felt kind of unnecessary. I mean, Escape from New York's a classic, so there really was no reason to do this, especially considering they just remade the first film. So I don't know. I mean, there's some good scenes. Like, one we didn't talk about was that bit with the can, and nobody draws until this hits the ground, and then he just throws it and kills everybody. That was great, but I don't know. It just feels unnecessary.
This movie was a hot mess. but if you enjoy laughing at really bad CGI, then this is for you.
Perfect. Pretty.
I would agree with Daniel. I think if you like the first one, you may as well watch the second one. Like, there's no reason not to if you don't mind wasting a little bit of your time, because it's still fun. It's just really dumb.
Yeah. See, my thoughts are the opposite. I guess I liked it more than you. This is a perfect lazy Sunday afternoon movie. There's nothing to follow. You could come in at the middle. You could come in the... You won't miss anything. It's not like watching every minute of it, I got somehow more of the plot if I had come in half an hour late. You know, you can fall asleep watching it and wake up, feel fine. Right?
You could just leave it on loop for, two, three days.
It's not even loud enough to wake you up most of the time.
It's a great hangover movie.
Snake Plissken's about at this level all the time, too. He sounds like he's got a cold, which is method. I don't know. I thought it was perfectly fine. You're right. You want to see some spectacularly bad CGI. I mean, this is sub-Spawn level at times.
Yeah, definitely worse than Spawn.
I think Spawn... The biggest problem with it is it used it fairly sparingly. Like, the cape looked stupid, but it was very little.
Let's not give too much credence to Spawn here.
No. But what I was saying is they spent it all at once, like that devil scene. This, they used it very thinly. So $50 million was like buildings for 45 minutes. And so by the end, they really did look like the flyover scene for that what's that movie or that video game where you'd hit the button? It was like Time Cop?
Time Crisis?
Time Crisis, yeah. Like level. You're flying over Time Crisis.
And there was also the one, I think it was actually in L.A., the two shooter in L.A. It was a helicopter.
And you were you had a partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what it felt like.
I think that one was also like Time Cops. Or
Time Crisis 2. There were three of those games.
Yeah.
We need more arcade standees. However, we are out of time. We could talk about this all day.
Time Crisis episode?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We should do a video games one.
Are there Time Crisis cabinets at Dave & Buster's?
They actually released a version for a console. I forget which console it was.
Ooh.
But yeah.
And there's like, I guess, a button on the side of the gun to squat.
Yeah, or a pedal. There was one that had a pedal. That one was cool.
Use the drum set. Use the Rock Band. set. All right. So, guys, next week we enter December. So we are switching over to traditional holiday movies. This one is not a traditional holiday movie as per se, but for some reason it's shown on ABC Family all the time. And so I will go out on a limb and I say it is Gene Wilder's best musical movie. So tune in next week and every future week as we put another bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
I Hope You Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!